Let me paint you a picture. You've got a Global Security Operations Center, a GSOC, except it wasn't actually built to be a GSOC. It was built to be a security monitoring center. So the people sitting there, they were hired to monitor cameras, to verify badges, to troubleshoot alarms. They're good at it. They're intelligent, they're thoughtful, they're motivated. But then, over time, the expectations shifted. Now they're being asked to write executive updates, provide situational awareness, maybe even make analytic assessments about risk. And the person leading this function is sitting there thinking, this isn't that complicated. Why aren't they getting it? And so what happens? Frustration from leadership, because the output isn't where it, quote unquote, should be, from the team, because they are being asked to do a job they were never trained or really hired to do. And instead of taking a step back and asking what produced this outcome, we do what organizations most always do. We make a very quick diagnosis and try to force the same pieces into a new puzzle. We add processes, we restructure roles, we add layers of bureaucracy, we build step-by-step workflows so detailed that, in theory, no one can screw it up. We hire someone to train them. We try to engineer a fail-safe. But here's the problem. The issue was never that the process wasn't tight enough, or that the people weren't bright enough, or that they needed a better manager. The issue is that the system itself was misaligned. You took a function designed for one thing and expected it to operate as something completely different, without changing the inputs, without changing the incentives, without changing the skills of the people inside it. And now you've got a team that's constrained by process, but still not producing the outcome that you want. And leadership is frustrated, and the team is frustrated, and the system, well, it's doing exactly what it was designed to do. And this is where systems thinking starts to matter. Because if you don't understand the system that you're working within, you will almost always try to fix the wrong thing. Welcome to The Unknown Knowns, where intuition meets tradecraft. I'm Dr. Angela Lewis, and this is a space for people who think for a living, intelligence professionals, leaders, and decision makers navigating complexity, uncertainty, and imperfect information in a fast-paced world. Each week, we explore how intuition, bias, and judgment shape the way we make sense of complexity and how to get better at it. Today's episode is about systems. Not the kind that you install, upgrade, or troubleshoot with a help desk ticket. Not the human body's very impressive nervous system. And not even really an ecosystem. Now, to be fair, those are all systems too. The same underlying ideas show up there as well. But that's not the system we're talking about today. I'm talking about the kind of system that quietly determines how decisions are made, how problems show up, and why certain outcomes keep repeating themselves, no matter how many times you try to fix them. These days, a lot of job descriptions in intelligence, in leadership, and honestly, across a whole lot of fields, say they're looking for a systems thinker. And that sounds impressive. It sounds strategic. It sounds like the kind of person you want at the helm when things get complicated. But what does that actually mean? Because here's the thing, systems thinking is one of those ideas that is simultaneously much simpler and much more complex than we tend to make it. And as someone who used it as the backbone for my PhD dissertation, I've spent a lot of time sitting in that tension. If you strip away the jargon, systems thinking is really about one core idea. Nothing exists in isolation. Every decision, every behavior, every outcome you care about is part of a web of relationships, sometimes visible, often not. I like to think about it as a spider web, or maybe even better, a set of invisible strings. Thank you, Taylor Swift. You tug on one part of the system and something else moves, sometimes right away, sometimes hours, days, or months later, and sometimes in places that you weren't even looking. Because when we think linearly, we are thinking of direct causal relationships. A leads to B leads to C. Systems thinking says it's more like A influences B, which loops back and changes A, which also quietly reshapes D, E, and F in the background. And if you work in intelligence, this should already sound pretty familiar, even if you've never called it systems thinking, because we regularly talk about second and third order effects. When we ask, okay, if this happens, then what happens next? And then what happens? That, at its most basic level, is systems thinking. And when we're trying to anticipate unintended consequences, not just the direct outcome of an action, But the ripple effects it sets off across a region, a market, or a network, that's also systems thinking. Analysts are trained to do this. We're trained to push past the first order, most obvious explanations, the ones that give us that initial sense of cognitive ease, and ask, what does this trigger? What might adaptation look like? Where does this create pressure somewhere else in the system? Because actions don't land in a vacuum. They land in a dynamic environment that reacts to those actions. So to anchor this in a little bit of theory, one of the foundational distinctions in systems thinking is between open and closed systems. A closed system is, in theory, sealed off from its environment. No external inputs, no external influences. In reality, though, almost nothing we deal with in intelligence or leadership is truly a closed system. What we're dealing with are open systems, systems that are constantly exchanging information, energy, and resources with their environment, systems that adapt, systems that evolve under pressure. This idea comes out of the work of Austrian biologist Ludwig von Bertalanffy and Russian philosopher Alexander Bogdanov, and later organizational theorists and social psychologists like Daniel Katz and Robert Kahn, who argued that you can't understand a system by looking at its parts in isolation. You have to understand the relationships and the environment those relationships exist within. The thing is, when we talk about systems theory, it can start to feel a little abstract, like, okay, cool, systems exist, got it. But Katz and Kahn take it a step further. They ask, what does it actually mean for an organization to function as an open system? And more importantly for us, what does it look like in intelligence work, in leadership, in real decisions under real pressure? They break it down into 10 characteristics, but instead of thinking these are 10 separate ideas, it's more useful to think of them as one continuous story, how an organization survives, adapts, and makes decisions in a constantly changing environment. It starts with input. In intelligence, this often looks like collection. No organization and no intelligence function operates in a vacuum. You're constantly pulling in information, signals, data, context. It might look like measuring troop movements ahead of a potential escalation, tracking regulatory chatter before a major policy shift, or even internally, hearing that a key executive is pushing for expansion into a new market. These are your raw inputs. And it's important to note here that if your inputs are narrow, biased, or incomplete, everything downstream is already compromised. So, for example, if you only listened to official government statements ahead of something like the lead-up to Russia's invasion of Ukraine, you likely missed some very important signals. Next comes throughput, the transformation. This is the work of analysis. And in many ways, it's where analytic tradecraft lives. You're taking messy, incomplete, often ambiguous inputs and turning them into something structured. So instead of just saying there's military activity, you're asking, what are the plausible scenarios? What indicators would differentiate them? What assumptions am I making? In a corporate context, this might be you're seeing signals about supply chain disruption in Southeast Asia, but is this a short-term logistics issue or an early indicator of broader geopolitical risk? And this is where rigor matters, because without structure, without method, you're not transforming, you're just reacting. Then you get output, or in my Intel brain, dissemination. This is the briefing, the assessment, the recommendation. For example, we assess a high likelihood of near-term escalation with potential spillover into energy markets, or we assess moderate risk to supply continuity over the next 90 days, recommend diversifying sourcing now. But here's where a lot of intelligence teams get sort of tripped up. Output isn't the end of the process. That's just what you're sending back into the system. Because then the cycle repeats. Katz and Kahn call this cycles of events. Let's say leadership makes a decision based on your assessment, pauses expansion, shifts sourcing, or increases security posture. That decision changes the environment, which creates new inputs, which requires new analysis. Sure, it occasionally happens that an intelligence process ends at answering the question, but for most questions, this is yet another example of where the intelligence cycle becomes iterative. Now, left on its own, any system will start to degrade. So open systems have to actively fight that through negative entropy. In practice, this might look like bringing in new data sources instead of relying on the same reporting streams, challenging long-held assumptions about a stable region, or updating analytic frameworks as technology or threats evolve. Think about how many organizations were caught flat-footed by something like the COVID-19 pandemic. Not because there was no information, but because systems weren't refreshing their assumptions fast enough. This is where feedback comes in. Your system is constantly receiving signals from the environment. Did your assessment hold up? Did the risk materialize the way you expected? Did the decision maker actually use your insight? For example, if you assessed low likelihood of unrest ahead of a major political event and then protests erupted within 48 hours, that's feedback. Not necessarily failure, but definitely feedback. But only if you actually loop it back into your process and ask, what did we miss? Now, here's another nuance. Systems, by nature, seek stability, but the environment is constantly changing. That's dynamic homeostasis. Think about an intelligence team supporting a global company during a period of rapid change, say shifting regulatory environments, emerging tech risks, or evolving geopolitical tensions. Leadership still needs consistent, reliable insight. But the way you produce that insight might need to evolve. Faster production timelines, or new analytic tools, or different stakeholder engagement. Too rigid and you can't adapt. Too reactive and you lose consistency. As systems grow, they become more complex. That's differentiation and specialization. You might have regional analysts, cyber specialists, supply chain experts, protective intelligence teams, and that specialization is powerful. But it also creates friction. For example, your cyber team sees a threat vector. Your geopolitical analyst sees rising tensions in the same region. Your supply chain team is focused on cost efficiency. If those aren't integrated, you miss the bigger picture. So leadership becomes less about control and more about integration. Then there's equifinality. There's more than one way to get to the right answer. Two analysts might approach the same problem differently. One uses scenario analysis, another uses historical analogies, another uses structured techniques like ACH, and they can still arrive at a sound judgment. Global companies saw this in real time across organizations trying to assess the trajectory of COVID early on. Different models, different assumptions, different pathways. Some were more accurate than others, but multiple approaches were valid ways of getting there. The goal isn't one single method, it's defensible reasoning. And finally, boundaries. Every system has them. They define what's inside and outside, but in an open system, those boundaries are permeable. Intelligence teams sit at the intersection of internal decision-making and external reality. For example, you're translating external geopolitical risk into internal business impact. Too closed and you're disconnected from reality, too open, and you risk becoming noise instead of insight. So again, it's a balance. So when you step back and look at all of this together, it isn't just theory, but rather a blueprint for how intelligence actually functions, and honestly, how it can fail. It explains why missed signals happen, why silos matter, why feedback loops break down, why organizations get surprised. Because intelligence isn't just a product, it is a living system, one that requires inputs, transformation, feedback, adaptation, and leadership to hold it all together. And if you want to make your brain hurt just a little bit more, most organizations aren't just a system, they are systems within systems within systems. Your intelligence team is a system. It sits inside a larger organizational system. That organization operates within an industry, within a geopolitical environment, within a broader global system. And all of those layers are interacting with each other all the time. Some of those systems you can influence, some of them you can partially shape, and some of them you have absolutely no control over. And if you really let yourself see all of that at once, it can get overwhelming. So the goal of systems thinking isn't to map out every possible variable and interaction until you're paralyzed. It's to understand enough of the system to make better decisions within it, to know which levers you have access to and which ones you don't. When I use systems theory as the backbone of my dissertation, looking at how intelligence functions support decision-making in complex environments, I was trying to make sense of this complexity. And one of the things that really became clear is that systems thinking is powerful, but it's also uncomfortable because it forces you to sit with that complexity longer than most organizations and people want to. So what do we do instead? We simplify. We see an outcome that we don't like and we jump straight to fixing it. But if we haven't actually understood the system that produced that outcome, we're not fixing the problem, we're just treating a symptom. It's the old idea that if the only tool that you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. Except in organizations, the hammer is often process. Something goes wrong, we often default to implementing processes. We add a checklist or a layer of approval. We try to engineer a way to keep it from failing. So let's say an analyst misses something. A product goes out, maybe that isn't up to standard. The instinct is often, we need a tighter process. Step one, step two, step three, so this never happens again. And sometimes that's the right call. But sometimes the real issue isn't the absence of process. It's that you don't have people who have the expertise, or even more importantly, who have been empowered to critically evaluate the situation and problem solve in real time. And no amount of rigid process is going to fix that, because it's really difficult to plan for every possible contingency. Because from a systems perspective, you haven't changed the underlying conditions that produce the problem. You just constrained one pathway where it showed up. And when you do that, what you get is organizational whack-a-mole. The issue disappears in one place, and then it pops up somewhere else, though it may look slightly different. But really, it's just a new symptom driven by the same root cause. And this is where systems theory becomes a leadership discipline, not just an analytic one, because it requires you to ask a harder question. Am I solving for the outcome I just saw, or am I changing the system that made the outcome likely in the first place? Now, fair warning, if you're anything like me, once you start seeing systems, you start seeing feedback loops everywhere. Some are reinforcing, where patterns actually accelerate themselves. Some are balancing, where the system is attempting to stabilize. If you're thinking strategically and you start to understand what the system is naturally built to achieve, you'll get the outcome you're aiming for. But if your system is optimized for a different outcome, you'll find that you're often fighting the system rather than having it work for you. Now let's shift back to intelligence and what the implications are for the field. If we accept that in intelligence, our job is not to create certainty, but to create a better understanding of uncertainty, systems thinking gives us a way to map that uncertainty, to see not just what's happening, but why certain outcomes become more likely than others. So when someone says they want a systems thinker, what they often mean is someone who can see the invisible strings, someone who understands what else is happening that is influencing outcomes, and someone who knows that if you want to change outcomes, you almost always have to change the system itself. Because process can give you the illusion of control, but understanding the broader system is where strategy actually lives. So what does it mean to be a systems thinker? It means you understand that most outcomes aren't random. They're produced by structures, incentives, constraints, and relationships, many of which are invisible unless you go looking for them. It means realizing this isn't just a people problem or a process problem, it's a system problem. It means asking, what produced this outcome, not just how do we fix it? It means being mildly suspicious of simple explanations, not because you want things to be complicated, but because you know they already are. It means not getting seduced by a quick win that makes something look better for 5 minutes if it's going to make something else worse 6 months from now. And if I'm being honest, it also means you've probably ruined your ability to see anything in isolation ever again, which is great for insight and less great for relaxing. Because once you start seeing the system, you can't unsee it. But in reality, being a systems thinker isn't about making things more complicated. It's about understanding the complexity that's already there so you can act more effectively within it. Thanks for listening to The Unknown Knowns. If this episode made you think or rethink, share it with a colleague or friend who's ready to level up their tradecraft. Subscribe for more short, sharp conversations about the art and science of professional judgment. Until next time, stay curious, stay grounded, and keep turning intelligence into impact.